You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and this is the first part of a two-part episode. One we'll be recording just after UFC Fight Night, Glover versus Sherry. The second part will be the Fight Night from the weekend, Walt Harris versus Alistair Overeem. Carlos has pretty much just finished watching the show, so let's just go over and see what we thought. Start with the prelims. We opened up the show with Chase Sherman making his comeback after going back into the wilderness of indie MMA with a decent result against a nobody name, to be fair, in Art Villanueva. Then we had Brian Keller with an absolutely disgusting knockout of Hunter Azure. I don't think Carlos watched the prelims, but he'd go back and watch how Keller KO'd Hunter Azure. Wow, it was disgusting. Dude should be on a murder charge. Then we had Omar Morales picking up the decision against Gabriel Benitez. And then in the feature prelim, in the women's bantamweight, we had Sajara Eubanks picking up the decision against Sarah Marais in a very, very lacklustre fight for me. Going into the main card.
Just before they're going on to the UFC, you know Sarah Eubanks, the way they're pushing her, I like the way the UFC are doing it, even though she's got like a relatively big name, and like everyone knows that Dana White already sort of has like a little bit of a soft spot with her, but they're not sort of feeding her to the lion straight away. They sort of building her confidence up slowly, and they're not pushing her like, right, you're going straight on like the main event or no, the main card.
I understand
like
that. I think she just struggled a bit against who you would expect. Someone like Sarah Marais, you would expect her to actually steamroll, and she did kind of struggle, but yeah, I do get your point. Going into the main card though, six fights on this main card. Started with Michael Johnson against Thiago Moises in the lightweight division, and I bet Carlos actually had a stiffy at this match, and especially at the ending. We'll quickly go through what happened in the first round. It was all Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, he's outclassing Thiago Moises here. Moises had no kind of answer to him. He threw a good couple of head kicks, did Moises, but it was pretty much the Michael Johnson show in the first round. Well, quite to the second round, it was like two different fights. Moises went for the single leg. He pulled to the back, grabbed Johnson's leg, and Johnson just didn't do the right things at all. Basically, worked his way into the heel hook, tried to roll out, tapped, and again. And we spoke about this on the last episode. The referee, Keith Peterson, again. The tap come, it was absolutely clear. Keith Peterson run to basically kneel beside Michael Johnson, and Johnson had to tap a second time for it to happen. There's something going on with Keith Peterson. That guy definitely needs some sort of like retraining or a refresher course, because we've seen with the likes of what's he called? The one who holds on to heel hooks all the time.
It's not Farwood's about to say Alton Lawford, but it's not.
No.
It's the guy who got basically cut from the UFC, and then he also got stripped from. Where did he go to?
Did he go to Bare Knuckle?
Oh, what's he called?
It's going to annoy me, but.
I'll have to look that up.
I'm sure he's Cuban as well.
No, I don't think he is. Is he not Brazilian?
No, he's
Cuban. Well, just have a look that up, because that's going to annoy me, like, because I know his last name is L. Or is it L?
Hector Lombard.
That's it, Hector Lombard. He got cut from the UFC for holding heel hooks too long. He's a Cuban, alright. Yeah, and he basically was just fucking people's like ACLs up
and that's what could happen there. I mean,
well, I think that's what I'd have, because Michael Johnson, he didn't get up, did he? At first when he tapped and Keith Peterson jumped over, I thought to myself, he's got himself back in good books there with fans, because that's a good stoppage. And then he didn't fucking stop it, and then he had to tap again. I'm like, shit, well, mate, you've just got yourself a little bit. You weren't the best of the fans since like last week. But,
exactly.
But yeah, going the first round, it was just all Michael Johnson. I just loved it how he, that left hand of his was just near enough landing every time. He was mixing his combos up and still throwing that left hand.
For me, it was his cage control. It was just the way he, I mean, we'll get on to someone stalking the opponent later on, but the way he kind of like
just kept his pressure.
Closed off Moises and just wouldn't allow him to get anywhere. Such a talented fighter, and then just to make such a basic error in the second and lost him the fight.
Well, that's it, but he knew that Moises is good with his kicks, so he knew that, and Michael Johnson, we know through the fights he's had with Khabib, the fights he's had with Nate Diaz, we know he's been able to have. Yeah,
they even spoke about it on the commentary. He was the only person to really hurt Khabib.
Yeah, well, that's it. He has got really good boxing, and that's why a lot of guys sort of fear standing with him, because if he gets his combinations off, he can hurt you, and you saw it. He cut Moisey off, because he knew if he give Moisey a chance to go forward and get them kicks off, he could be a danger to him. So he knew, keep the pressure on. And I think in the second, you've got to give it to Moises, his cornerman. They knew on the feet that Moises were getting battered. Moises were getting beat up, getting ripped to the body, and just fucking his chin just getting whacked. And they knew straight away, right, we know this guy's got good wrestling defence, and we know he's got good boxing, so you're going to have to throw some, you're going to have to just throw some wild shit in there and look for the finish, because if you stand with this guy, he's going to finish you. And the only way for you to win this fight is to take down. And that, what a perfect fighter to listen to his corner, to go straight out to the fight. Michael Johnson wanting to go straight to the game plan, because it's clearly worked for 5 minutes, wanting to back Moisey up, get against the cage and use his boxing. Only problem is that he got a bit overconfident. He didn't really expect the takedown straight away. Because if you saw the first takedown, what Moisey did in the first, Michael Johnson fucking sprawled and near enough did a fucking front flip to, and look at how fast that were to the second one when Moisey went in for a double. And yeah, fair enough, he went for like unders, but he didn't really sprawl that much. That's why Moisey were able to still stay where he were and grab the single leg and still lift him up. But Michael Johnson, like I said, he's a strong guy as well. So when Moisey knew that he wasn't going to be able to complete the takedown going backwards, he knew, I want this leg anyway, that's why I've got it. Yep. He pulled Michael Johnson on top of him.
Yep.
And that's where Michael Johnson made the mistake. And Daniel Cormier, I know when they say it's quiet enough, but I think Daniel Cormier, I know he were trying to, got to give it to commentary team, they were trying to be quiet, but Daniel Cormier did say like the sort of perfect things. He wasn't basically using that other leg to push off. He left his leg there for Moisey to basically tie up, and his other leg was like wailing about. And what a phenomenal fighter to be able to basically get battered for 5 rounds straight and have your corner.
5 minutes.
5 rounds straight. Yeah. For 5 minutes.
Not Anthony Smith.
Yeah, well, yeah, fucking hell, that fight was phenomenal. Yeah, but basically get battered for 5 minutes and his cornerman to tell him that, yo, we need to switch up our game plan, because it's not working. And he went out there, did it perfectly, and he got the sub straight away. And that, the way you were able to do it, to fully commit to the takedown, not being able to get it, and just being able to work, and make decisions on the spot. Because when you're fighting a dangerous guy like Michael Johnson, even at close range, if you're in his guard, he's going to crack you on the hooks, and he's going to potentially hurt you. So to be able to be quick thinking, like, double leg, shit, single leg, shit, right, pull guard. And it's to be able to just quick think in them situations against such a high level opponent, that's what, it just shows what sort of level fight IQ Moisey's actually got. But congratulations to him for, like I said, for getting the finish. But you can't help but just feel a little bit sorry for Johnson, because he worked that were his fight up until Moisey in his corner switched up that game plan perfectly.
It certainly was. Going into the next one, the old dog, Andrei Arlovski, taking on debutant Philip Lins.
Fuck me.
Arlovski picks up the decision. For me, a fair decision. I don't think I'd give it, to the judge, I think, give it 30-27, which I think is a little bit... kind of leaning towards Arlovski. But the first round I gave to Lins, I felt he came out and he, whilst it was a nervy round between both of them, when Lynn's landed, you could see that he kind of had a lot of power, both in his right and his left. Though there were a couple of times when he landed a good couple of combinations, and it just showed that Arlovski's still got a massively tough chin.
That fucking beard though is phenomenal.
Yeah. Arlovski landed a spinning back fist. Lynn's countered that with a leg kick. There was not a lot of big action in that. It was almost like a feeling out round, I think Lynn's won because he had the better and more accurate shots. Coming into the second, Arlovski's kick started to come out into his game a little bit more. The pace between them both actually fairly slowed. You could see where they were both gassed a little bit. But Arlovski was landing the better counters, I thought. His big route was absolutely beautiful. He started going on to leg kicks then. And then Lynn's kicked him, tore directly in the dick.
That was fucking hot.
Yeah, the slow motion, I don't like the slow motion on that because it looked brutal.
Do you know what? I know it sounds horrible, but do you know the perfect thing about the atmosphere with the no crowd in there? You can hear everything now. Mm-hmm.
Lots of shouting, fuck.
The nut shots are horrible. And Aidan, my sparring partner, he knows he's a dick for this because I call him a dick plenty of times. I was wearing a cup and we were in sparring, and he went for the same kick that Linz did, and he just went a little bit too hard, and he kicked me so hard in the cup, my cup fucking, it cracked, and it was fucking horrible, and the noise that makes, and I know the commentary said it weren't a direct cup shot, but fuck you, they hurt like a motherfucker, and I could just feel the pain Arlovski were in, just off like, and especially not just like a lightweight kicking you there, but just a heavyweight, just a fucking tree just coming up and kicking you in the sack.
And then it almost happened again in the third, where Lynn's give Arlovski a leg kick, but it was really high up, like really high up on the quads, and Arlovski went like,
after basically when Herb Dean gave him that warning, like, yo, that were as worse as it's gonna get, like, this is a warning. You seen him, like, and the commentary did make a note of it, that he did stop sort of throwing them inside leg kicks up until he threw that one and then kicked him in dick again.
Yeah, so in the third, it was pretty much tit for tat. Arlovski went with a body kick. Lynn's would go with a body kick. Arlovski had landed a couple of shots in a combo. Lynn's would go for a couple of shots. I think what won the round for me was when Arlovski tied up Lynn's in, controlled him a little bit against the cage. A very tight third round. Going to the last like minute or so, Arlovski landed a couple of leg kicks and a body kick, and then you could see the swelling over Lynn's eye, so I think that secured the victory for him. I would have given it 29-28 Arlovski, which seems a fair result, but again, Arlovski is just like the fighter that won't die.
Well, definitely, he's definitely a legend in that division, and I don't think Lynn's has got basically go home sour. He fought the perfect fight that he could have, but the one thing that did it for me were the way Arlovski were able to throw them oblique kicks and throw them body shots, sort of like Conor McGregor sort of style, like the toe peeking, like the gut, if you will. And that sort of, you could tell after the first round, Arlovski knew that Lynn's had some fucking strong hands. He was fast. He reminded me, if you will, Cain Velasquez back in his prime, the way he were able to like knock Nogueira out and stuff like that. He's able to just flow with his boxing, but Lynn's has got, he's got some heavy hands, him. And when he hit Arlovski, he backed him up, and Arlovski knew, like, fuck, this guy's got some power. And like I said, experience made the fight. Arlovski knew that he's not being able to allow this guy to get close to him, so he needed to keep him at distance. And he did that perfectly with them body shots and taking the legs out from underneath them with them oblique kicks, and being able to mix his game up. And I think that's what happened in the later on, going into the second and going into the third. Lynn's weren't able to get the shots off that he were doing, because he slowed down a lot from taking the leg kicks and taking the body shots. And you can't really say to him that, oh, it was his own fault for not defending him. It's just Arlovski were that good at sort of doing it counter-wise. every time you've seen it, every time we were flowing that oblique kick, he weren't sort of doing it as Lindsay just stood still. He did it as he was just stood still and just about to move forward him for his attack, just to stop him directly in his track. And that's exactly what he did with the body kicks as well. And that's what mixed up the fight for me. But wow, they were throwing hands then for 15 minutes straight, and yeah, being able to keep up that pace at that weight class is impressive, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Then we dropped down a lot of divisions to Ray Borg versus Ricky Simone. I think this was the best fight to watch on the whole card. Maybe save the main event. But yeah, Ricky Simone, I was absolutely disappointed with him before the fight even started for shaving off that mullet. He actually looked like he's got a proper 9-to-5 job now. I'm fairly disappointed in him. But he does explain it at the end of the fight that it was because he was sick of sleeping on the settee and he wants to get some action in the bedroom. So a fair play to him, I can't be mad at him for that. First round was such a good round for Ricky Simone. His ground game and his takedowns were just absolutely beautiful to watch. Every time that he took down, he was going for arm bars and he was landing some beautiful ground and pound. And fair play to Borg, he was able to escape quite a few times. But it was almost like Simone could take him down at will in that first round. Great first round for Borg there. Up and down on the ground, just, yeah, such a talented guy. And then in the second round, again, it was kind of a lot of the same thing. It was Borg did better to sprawl and to kind of avoid the takedowns a little bit more, got a bit more of his own kind of pressure off. But I still thought that Simone took that second round, basically because he had more versatility in his game. When he realised that the takedowns weren't working as well, he was still able to stand and bang. And then in that second round was, I think Borg went for a spinning back elbow or something like that, and Simone was like looking around like, who opened the window? How did I get here? And then there was another time when Borg went, come on kid, let's fight, and Ricky Simone was like,
come on, I'm older than you.
I'm older than you. This has been, I was speaking to my other son about the difference between the no crowd UFCs and the no crowd wrestling, and the no crowd UFC is so much better to watch. You get to hear all the kind of like the jabs between each other and the heavier shots. It's just so much more fun. Third round, I think Borg kind of came out of his shell, but it was a little bit like too late. I think Ricky Simone did enough in those two rounds to guarantee the victory, as long as he didn't get knocked out. But even in that round, whilst Borg had the better action and the harder shots and was even getting his own takedowns, I still think Simone held up his own with the takedowns and with the shots. So Simone coming back off that kind of like disheartening loss to Uriah Faber, picks up a good victory there and puts himself straight back in that pack at bantamweight.
Definitely, like Ricky Simone, what a performance he put on last night against Ray Borg. Now, speaking on the crowd, like you're saying, it is better. You can hear all the little jabs. It is a little bit more enjoyable listening to the commentary, listening to the fighters and stuff. But in a way, as well, when you're in a sport like mixed martial arts, like Conor McGregor said, and a lot of people were giving him shit when he was basically saying that the fans make the sport, and anyway they do. Like, if you can imagine, if in that fight, if the fans were there, they would have been going fucking crazy, because that would have been a war. And it's a lot more easier to settle into a fight and get more comfortable when you're getting some good shots off and you're hearing thousands of people fucking and cheering and having a good time.
But then to counter that, when we talk about the main event and we talk about like Glover going for submissions, that crowd would have been booing its arse off.
Yeah, well, that's it.
You know what I mean? So it does kind of balance out. I think the UFC has come off better with no crowd than wrestling has, but it obviously it does need a crowd because that's where the money is.
Well, it's not. That's it. I'm not even trying to get about the money factor. It's just more of like Ray Borg. He started basically switching on and getting more into the fight, like in like the third round of that fight. Ricky Simone, in the first one he spoke to him, he's like, let's try and get that money, and Ray Borg like, I'm just trying to win, and it would. it was like you could tell, like you could tell he were just trying to win, but Ricky Simon were just it was just too much for Ray Borg, and Ray Borg just didn't. I don't know, it's like he just didn't know how to switch on up until he got comfortable, and he's like, you know what, I can take his shots. I've probably got the same amount of power, and for me, Borg was faster than him in the boxing combo. So if he was to push the pace in that second or that first round, he would have took that victory. And for me, like I say, I'm trying to get to the point of in more in the exchanges, Ray Borg was getting like somewhat the better shots off. And when it's like crowd reaction from them sort of things, it's like more of, you know, it gives me confidence. You're like, I'm actually winning this fight, and I don't just think it in my head. I can't just stay in my corner and shout it. I can hear like thousands of people cheering. Yeah, and even though you can hear like booing and stuff like that, it's when you're in them sort of things, it's you're interested and you're concentrating on the fight, but you can also hear the people who's in a way cheering for you. So it's that's what gives you a bit of a confidence booster. But like I say, I'm not trying to take anything away from Ricky Simon, but saying if the crowd were there, he would have got beat the shit out of. But it's that was just an all round quality fight, and just I don't know from that fight. How can people say them divisions are boring? Them like bantamweight and featherweight, and look at how fast them fuckers move, man.
They're so good. I love watching it, and it's more for the technical skill. Because obviously you don't, knockouts are good in that division, but they're very few and far between, and it's all about that, the speed and the technique.
Oh, definitely.
So next on the card was lightweights with Drew Dober taking on. Drew Dober taking on Alexander Hernandez. Obviously, there's a big hype train against Alexander Hernandez, and I think Drew Dober could feel like a little bit aggrieved that he was kind of almost thrown in as a sacrificial lamb to keep that hype train running, and he proved that he was no sacrificial lamb. This was a big, heavy-hitting fight. Hernandez started early, got a single leg takedown. He actually struggled to get him down at first, and Dober wasn't one for staying down. Got back up pretty much straight away by sliding back up the cage. Then Dober, just one of the best things in this fight was when he faked the takedown and then connected with a punch combination, and it really rocked Hernandez, and you could see him like kind of have to shake the cobwebs out. And I think Dober like started to quickly become the aggressor in that third round, and he ended up cutting Hernandez. Hernandez tried for the takedown, and Dober was then like wise to that and started to be able to stuff those attempts. The round ended though with a finger poke, which was a little bit of a shame because it was a very back and forth round. Hernandez was poked in the eye by Dober, and Herb Dean was gonna call it off, but obviously the bell went for the end of the round, and the replay shows that the finger literally went right into the eye, so bad. Herb Dean actually gave him a warning for it, I think, didn't he? I said to stretch his fingers up to the air. I think it happened quite a lot, because I think he gave Anthony Smith a warning as well.
It was a problem, that's it. That were a problem a lot on that card tonight. Like, I saw, like, fair enough, it could have, like, it died down a bit, but you can see how many fighters haven't been able to do a lot of sparring, a lot of stuff like that, for how much sloppy they were and keeping their hands down, and how many times the refs were giving them all warnings, like, keep your fingers up. What was surprising for me is the refs weren't taking points away, because in that situation, there's no crowd there to basically boo you, call you basically a dick or all like that. In that situation, and especially Keith Peterson, I expected him to at least take one or two points away in a couple of fights of them last night.
Mm-hmm. Going into this second round, again, we got another eye poke. This time it was Dober who got poked in the eye. So it was a little bit like tit for tat, an eye for an eye kind of thing. But this round was like Dober kind of taking the lead. His heavy shots, you could see that several times they hurt Hernandez. And Hernandez did a very interesting thing, and I was talking on Twitter about it, that he, when he got hurt, he went in for the takedown almost as if a way to kind of like get a breather but also control the fighter, which it was an interesting way of dealing with it, but unfortunately it didn't work for him, and when he was back on the feet, Dober just started like blitzing him, took him out. Herb Dean come in, saw that Hernandez wasn't defending smartly, and we end up with a standing knockout from Dober. Basically, Hernandez was rocking around like he was drunk. But yeah, good victory for Dober, especially with the fact that, like I said, the hype train behind Alex and Hernandez was massive, and Dober's kind of derailed that and put himself basically in contention. So good on Drew Dober.
See, fucking that fight, I loved it last night. I like both these guys. A lot of people were sleeping on Drew Dober because I don't think a lot of people that sort of knew him and stuff like that. And even though he started out at the UFC, like, I think it was like early 2014, somewhere around them times. And I know he didn't start off to the best starts, but his last three fights now have all come from KOs. His last fight where he KO'd his opponent in the first round. Now look at this one. He KO'd Hernandez in the second round. In that lightweight division, to be doing stuff like that, you're going to be making a name for yourself. And it's not like he's not got any experience, because even though he's only had, I think, 7 or 8 fights in the UFC, his record is like 20 odd and summit losses, but one no contest and something like that. So he has got experience, and he's only 31. So I know people say that might sound old, but that's still that pinnacle. Going into like your prime and stuff like that, because look at the likes of Yoel Romero and some of the guys who fought on the card tonight, mm-hmm. they're not the youngest guys, so they've got a lot of time in them. And Drew Dober, he's looking like he's doing the right things. For me, you can tell he has spent a lot of time welterweight. Drew Dober, he came in, yeah. he did come in the thicker fighter. Like you were to see Hernandez next to some lightweight, like, you look at Hernandez when he fought Cowboy, how thicker he looked, how bigger than he looked than Cowboy. Tonight, last night, he looked
the smaller fighter.
Yeah, he looked like, I don't know, he looked like the ill fighter out of them both, if you will. But yeah, Drew Dober, you can tell Hernandez had the speed advantage on there, but Drew Dober was just when he landed with them shots, even though they came slower than Hernandez's, when he landed, you're going to see the damage straight away. So it's not even that, the power were there, the accuracy were there, and when his face and his eye had started to like swell up, you just knew straight away, it's like, what's the damage behind that? What has Drew Dober been able to do behind that swelling and stuff like that? Is his orbital bone fucked? Can he see right? Has he got swelling? He's got like vision issues. And that's exactly what he basically, Drew Dober, were able to do. As soon as Drew Dober were able to fuck up his eye, he knew, right, buzzing, that's my key to winning this fight. I'm going to not try and take him down, I'm going to basically try and box him and finish him. And that's exactly what he did. Every time he got Hernandez hurt, he were all over him like a pit bull. He did not let him breathe. And I know Hernandez made a comment that he was a bigger fighter, that Drew Dober looked small and stuff like that, but that sometimes a case of eat your own words, and that's exactly what Drew Dober were able to do. We were able to go in there, put a performance on, and being able to weather the storm of Hernandez's sort of like Thai boxing, Taekwondo movement, if you will, and just being able to just go out there and land his shots perfectly and just, again, get a perfect KO, and not only that, break his name onto the top 15 rankings in the UFC.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, he's been there for such a long time. That would be maybe his 14th fight in the UFC. It's about time he strung a few wins together. And
well, that's
and
well, his last three. His last three fights are KOs, and his last opponent with that Nasrat thingy, that guy who based the Dana White. We're having good. Yeah. We're having good talks to him, and he, like I said, Drew Dober KO'd him in the first. Now look at Hernandez, a guy who were on a good like sort of win streak when he came into the UFC, and again Dana White still talks about him like highly. Drew Dober's been able to go in there and KO him in the second. Yeah. So Jared Oliver's looking to, even though he's 31, he's still young in the sport, and he's gonna, if he keeps on the way he's going, he doesn't look like he's gonna be slowing down anytime soon.
I agree. Going into now the co-main event, Ovince St. Preux making his heavyweight debut. I mean, we've spoke at length about how we think it may be a bad decision. Went up against one of the heavier hitters in the division in Big Ben Rothwell, and it went exactly how I expected it. I don't think that the heavyweight division is for Ovince St. Preux, and this kind of proved it. If he was dominated by Ben Rothwell, there's no other way to really explain it. He got off some of his own shots, but it was basically three rounds of Ben Rothwell stalking and hurting Ovince St. Preux. The first round, it was even a point where Rothwell, who is not overly known for his wrestling, whereas that is St. Preux's bread and butter, Rothwell took down St. Preux, and he had St. Preux going for a choke, whilst Rothwell was stood up, cranking the neck, and St. Preux was on his knees. But it was literally just Ovince St. Preux trying to avoid getting hit by Rothwell, and as soon as he got in that kind of boxing range, Rothwell landing that combination and that uppercut. Oof, I would not want to take a Rothwell uppercut. It looks so brutal. I give all three rounds to Rothwell. I thought he clearly dominated the whole fight. Every time St. Preux, he got some good shots off, but there was just nothing that could hurt Rothwell. You could see that the power wasn't there, and the kind of volume of shots wasn't there, where Rothwell, the way he stalks his opponent is scary. And if that guy could maybe add a bit of a better ground game to his arsenal, that he'd be a frowning fighter in that heavyweight division. But yeah, it was there's not really a lot more to say about it. It was literally just Rothwell landing shots. I mean, I've got to give props to St. Preux. He's got a chin. He's got a chin, because he took some big shots. He got hurt and rocked a couple of times. I think he ended up with probably got a broken nose. But he did survive till the end, which is kind of like a lot to build on. But I just don't think, if you can't take someone like Ben Rothwell, you're going to struggle against anyone higher than him, unfortunately. And I think Ovince St. Preux is a lesson learned, and DC said in commentary he expects him to go back down to 205 after this. So yeah, good win for Ben Rothwell. It doesn't really do anything for him in terms of rankings, because it's literally like beating up a kid. And then Ovince St. Preux goes back down to lightweight, I think.
See, that's where I think you're both maybe wrong. Like, even though, yeah, he did take a beating from Ben Rothwell. Like you say, his power level weren't there, but he did have the power when he came in. That counter punch is like precision beats power. It's when you are walking in. He were able to drop Ben Rothwell in that second with that counter left, but like you were saying, he had a little bit of the power to drop him. But because of the weight, and I think for how much weight he had to carry, and for how well Ben Rothwell were able to clinch up with him and just lean on Ovince St. Preux and just make Ovince St. Preux try and wrestle his way back up to his feet and just potentially just gas him out. Like, because when you've got a guy like Ben Rothwell, he weighs like 240-odd, 250-odd pounds, like, and he's like leaning on your neck and shoulders, and you're trying to breathe and you're hunched over and that lot. And you could see it where he was literally digging his fucking feet into the canvas, pushing onto Ovince St. Preux.
To make him carry his weight, which is a sensible tactic.
That's exactly what he were able to do. And I think he just were able to gas Ovince St. Preux out enough to where, yeah, when Ovince St. Preux did hurt him, he just didn't have the stamina, and he just didn't have the energy to just go into the finish. Even though when he did drop him, he basically just let him fucking stand back up, because he was like, I'm fucked, I can't fucking stop you. And yeah, even though Ben Rothwell, when he got into boxing range, he was able to get his shots off, and obviously we were doing a lot of running. What surprised me was he just didn't go for any takedowns. And I think early in the first against Ben Rothwell, he should have
try at least to get off a couple of leg kicks and at least try to get off a couple of takedowns and try and basically make Ben Rothwell carry his weight rather than the other way around, because it would I don't know his corner or anybody else or he himself didn't sort of predict that was sort of going to happen when they were going into the fight. You've got sort of a guy who's 205 pound who fights that weight class going up to heavyweight. Fair enough, it might be a big guy as it is, but that's still a new weight class fighting a high level opponent in Ben Rothwell. So you could. It's got to be on your game plan somewhere that you've got it in your arsenal, that you've practiced that this guy is going to somewhat try and lean on you and make you carry his extra weight that he's got on you. Mm-hmm. And all this improved just looked to me like he didn't know what to do. Like he was just fucked. Like he was quitting at the end of the day.
Yeah, unfortunately. And then let's go into this main event. A frustrating main event for me. I mean, it was great to watch, but I was so frustrated. First round, Anthony Smith, I felt it was his round. He landed the harder shots, the harder leg kicks. He got to share a bleeding from his nose almost straight away. His hands are just so scary. But then again, so were Teixeira, as the fight proves. Going into the second round, this is where, again, I think Smith started the better. But the kind of turning point was weird for me was when he landed that big right hand and it swelled to share his eye up, and obviously there's going to be some sort of orbital bone issue there. But that kind of like lit a fire under Teixeira, and instead of being like backing off and kind of being worried, it got him angry, and he was just unloading on Smith. Smith. Just he looked so tired after that. The end of that second round, I can't help but shake the feeling that he expected to finish Teixeira early, and he didn't prepare for going to a war. Going into the third round, and this was where the fight kind of like started to piss me off, because Teixeira really, really hurt Smith, and you could see that Smith was not there. The lights were on, but there was nobody at home, and Teixeira kept going for the sub, which was just annoying me, because he could have just ground and pounded, or he could have just knocked Smith out, and this fight should have ended in the third round, but it went to the fifth, because Teixeira kind of, whether it was respect for Smith and his kind of like wounded animal tactics, where he can hurt a fighter, and Teixeira didn't want to get that finished when the fighter basically just like landed one like quick lucky shot on him. But yeah, for the third and fourth round, Teixeira kept just trying to go for these subs, which I just didn't understand. He could have just pounded Smith's face, because all power to the guy, what a warrior for surviving. But in that third round, he had nothing, because his brains were mush. Same in the fourth round, he came out and his just brains were mush. I'm disappointed in his team for letting him go out in that fourth round, because that guy was not all there.
Well, he said to his team before the going into the fifth, he went, "My teeth are coming out, my teeth are not."
Well, there's a point in the fight where you can see Smith grabs his teeth off the canvas and slides them over to Jason Herzog, because obviously he's going to try and get his teeth put back in. But yeah, it was just Teixeira just absolutely battered Smith from the middle of the second round all the way till we eventually get the knockout. Wow, it was a brutal fight to watch, exciting to watch, but as a MMA fan, it was frustrating, because the fight went 10 minutes longer than it should have done, really. But great victory for Glover. So heartbreaking for Smith, especially. He's not had the best of times recently. He's obviously had all that grief with John Jones on Twitter. Then he had the break-in and with his house and the threatening of his family. It's just been a hard, hard time for him, and this is going to do him no favours. And it's hard to see where either of them go from this, because a win for Glover, whilst it's over a massive name in Anthony Smith, there's levels to that division. I don't think Glover gets back to a title shot from it. I think if Smith would have won, he would have been in a better place to get a title shot, but now obviously he tumbles down the ranking. So yeah, it was just a great fight to watch. So I'd have props to both guys, both absolute warriors. Carlos,
I fucking loved it. It was just going to share. It just, I don't think anyone can say Anthony Smith was shit. I don't think anyone can say Anthony Smith
didn't. No, absolutely not. And like, if it, I'm the only reason that Smith got dominated is because in that the end of that second round, he was totally rocked, and he's definitely got a concussion, definitely. So coming out for that third and fourth, it wasn't Anthony Smith coming out, it was a shell of Anthony Smith with no brain inside it.
Definitely. Glover Teixeira, he were able to, from look at his last performances in the UFC, have not been overly the best, but in this performance against a top level fighter, against Anthony Smith, who's the younger guy, who supposedly should have come in and knocked Glover Teixeira out in the first round, just like Rumble did. But fucking hell, just Anthony Smith, when he came out, his back was so fucking huge. He just looked like a fucking silverback gorilla, mm-hmm. but you could just see it. His posture just sort of changed coming later on into the round. He didn't look as big. He looked tired. And sometimes you as a cornerman, as a coach, and as a friend, you've got to save a fighter from himself. And I just loved that. I'd love to share a. Fair enough, he was fucked himself, because in that light heavyweight division, he threw over like 200 strikes. So I guarantee his muscles were fucking on fire. Yeah. So there's no wonder that I couldn't imagine why he couldn't finish like Anthony Smith, because Anthony Smith, he's got a chin, he's so fucking strong, and his nickname, he's not called the Lion Heart for no reason.
No, at
the
end of the day. And he proved it.
So you can't feel sorry to Glover. He were able to mix up his boxing, just absolutely dominate Anthony Smith, able to mix up his takedowns, mix up his submissions, and just constantly make Anthony Smith think about what he's going to do next, because Glover Teixeira knew that he didn't have the effort to finish him. He knew that he only got the energy in the fifth round when he started like getting into full mount. He were able to get that rabbit punch off, but they weren't that full heavy punches, because you could hear it were just more of, I'm just going to hit him here and just try and fucking hit him with loads of shots and hopefully the ref stops it. But he didn't have the energy, so we were able to just make Anthony Smith think about what he was going to do, because even when he went for the re-naked, he weren't fully committing to it. He was just like sort of sliding his arm under the neck, just so Anthony Smith lifted his head up, and as soon as he did it, Glover Teixeira just hit him with a couple of rabbit shots to the chin. It was just, and Glover Teixeira were able to, again, experience and knowledge in the fight game. He were able to just mix it up, and knew if it were going to go into the later rounds, he needed to get ahead on the scorecard, and he needed to beat Anthony Smith up, because even when Anthony Smith is on the feet, his hands are still dangerous. He can still knock you out. So Glover Teixeira were able to keep sort of out of distance, get in, fight when he needed to, mix it up. But what, as well with Anthony Smith, as well as much as he's got a fucking proper like a lion heart, he were getting absolutely beat up in that fight, and it's fair enough. I know a lot of fighters like say basically like, let me just get knocked out. If I'm gonna go out, I want to get go out basically getting knocked out. But he was defending himself well in that fight, so you couldn't really go mad at the ref for not stopping the fight, because he was defending himself. At the end of the day, you can't just stop the fight for someone getting punched in the face.
It was more muscle memory than anything.
Oh yeah, definitely. But at the end of the day, that's still, As a ref, you can't just go off. Because at the end of the day, that guy's still defending himself. He's still in that fight. Or he's making it look like he's in the fight. But when he went to his corner in that fifth round and he said, oh, my teeth are coming out, I'm knocked out, that's a sign right there. Like, DC was exactly right. Like, we've had it plenty of times in the gym. A fighter has got a bigger heart than brains.
Yeah.
They want to seem, they want to look like they want to continue fighting, but they don't. They know they're getting beat. So it's like when he was like, my teeth are getting knocked. It was like when Anthony Pettis, when he broke his hand, he knew he was getting beat in that fight. So when he went back to his corner and Dufour Rufus basically, and he said to Dufour Rufus, I broke my hand, and Dufour Rufus were like, is your hand broke? Tell me now. Like, if you're broken, I'm not letting my student go out there and do more damage to it. So if you tell me now it's broken, it's either broken or it's not. And you, that's when a fighter's there trying to tell you that,
yeah.
I want to continue, but at the end of the day, save me from myself at the end of the day. And Anthony Smith's corner wasn't able to save him, if you will. He'd give him a top sign. My teeth are falling out. He's basically knocked my fucking teeth out. Mm-hmm. I'd give my teeth to the ref. Like, he's going to knock the fucking brains out. And it pissed me off, because They didn't even acknowledge it. They just like, Matea for getting knocked out. Yeah, right, well, we'll just do that.
It was like, save your fucking fighter, man. Like, just because it's a main event in the UFC, your fighter, at the end of the day, that guy's still got a family, he's still got kids, he still needs to go home with a fucking... a brain cell and a paycheck at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even the teeth for me, though. It's the fact that he came in after that second round and his brains were rolling around in his skull.
Definitely.
And they sent him out in the third. Fair enough, it could easily just be a case of him shaking off the cobwebs. He came in the third, at the end of the third, in worse condition than he went out. And they still sent him out for the fourth. For the fourth, he came back in even worse and with no teeth. And they still sent him out in the fifth. It's worrying, very, very worrying that team didn't take it upon themselves to say, we're saving this
battle. Yeah, enough's enough.
It's a shame, but a good victory for Glover, who's wanting to take at least one last shot at the title. And news has come out overnight that maybe that could be happening because Bones is eyeing up a money fight with Ngannou. There was a lot of talk of obviously him having a rematch against Dominic Reyes, but Bones has taken the stance where he's beaten Reyes, so the only reason for him to want to fight Reyes again is money, and he said that the UFC are not offering the kind of money that he's interested in, whereas a fight against Ngannou, that is a money fight for him. And so yeah, we could see Bones moving up and kind of free up that division.
Yeah, I've
so.
Said that. Hopefully, I fucking hope that's true, because if anyone's going to give Ngannou trouble at where Ngannou's at now, will be Bones. Mm-hmm. And we also get to see that division sort of mixed up a bit. We get to see it sort of fresh move on. See what can happen. Who could be the next dominant champion, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely.
But what a performance off Glover Teixeira, being able to go out there and just execute a game plan like that. And if he's not old, 40-year-old. We still saw plenty of other people do it. Look at Yoramir and that lot. And even though Glover Teixeira looked old in the face and stuff like that last night,
he's looked like that since he was 17, though.
His technique and everything is still there. His power, his speed. Yeah. Fair enough. His stamina, his cardio's not there, but. He were near enough able to keep that pace up from round one all the way up to round five.
He had a more dominant performance against Smith than Bones did.
That, in my opinion, he did. Even though Bones that sort of were able to like finish him that quickly, Bones weren't able to sort of control him as well as Teixeira did. I don't think I saw anyone being able to control, even in the fucking clinches where we saw Anthony Smith being dangerous with them elbows.
Yeah.
How many elbows did you see Smith hitting Glover with?
Exactly. But how many shots did you see Smith absorb from Glover in those clinches?
Oh, yeah. But he's just going to fucking scull like a bull.
Yeah. So we've got another card this weekend, UFC Fight Night, Overeem versus Harris. We just had a late change to the card, actually. Matt Davis has pulled out of his fight with Geeka Chigadze, and he's been replaced with someone from... PFL, I think. Oh no, Titan FC's bantamweight champion Irving Rivera.
He's fucking quality. Yeah.
So I think that's actually a harder fight for Chikadze than Matt Davis, but that'll be on the prelims. I think I'm gonna keep these reviews as two separate shows, because it wouldn't be fair on either show to kind of condense them down and not give them the kind of like. The kind of breakdown that they deserve. So tune back in for our review of Overeem versus Harris. So yeah, you can find me on Twitter at DJ Kirby, find Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos, find the show at Five Rounds Pod. Thank you for everyone for listening, and that is the end.
Adios amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network. Envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.